Ho there! Welcome to the Swords and Scrolls podcast, where a rotating rogues gallery joins me in discussing comics and more in the genre of heroic fantasy. I am Jared Savitas, your guide in the Battle of the Barbarians. And joining me today in discussing round four of this battle and returning for the fourth time, how did that work out, is a friend who is nary afraid of a wild bull running through the marketplace. John Littrell, welcome back to the land of scrolls.
Man, four times. This is a great honor. You keep making the mistake over and over, and I appreciate it. So thank you.
It's not the last time I make the mistake, I'm sure, buddy.
Nice. he usually tags me in it so you can skip those episodes. But don't, because I'm bound to say something stupid and you can hold it against me in the future. Anyways, thanks for having me, Jared.
Hey, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it. I got to start off with my regular questions. Now, I don't know if we've talked, even though you've been on here four times. Let's see. Let's figure it out.
I don't remember if we talked about my origins with Conan, but I think we did, because I had a handful of things that I'd picked up, probably mostly through like those random bags and stuff that you get in like Toys R Us or KB toy stores, where you get like four or five issues of something, mm-hmm. Just random in there. Mm-hmm. How I got that Atom book from the late 80s or whatever.
The Sword of the Atom?
Yeah, the Sword of the Atom. That's how
Are
I got.
Are we going to talk that sometime?
We should absolutely talk that sometime. Because, man, I love those covers. A little harder to read the actual comic. But yeah, we should definitely talk about those sometime.
Maybe we'll just talk about the covers then.
Conan was someone where I really came in when Kurt Busiek was writing the stuff over at Dark Horse. That was really like my jumping on point, because I'm one of the dudes that I don't particularly enjoy the first couple of Conan the Barbarian movies. I like Red Sonja, but mm-hmm. Arnold as Conan never did anything for me. So I read the Kurt Busiek stuff, moved on to like Brian Wood, went back and like read some things here and there. I had read some of Robert Howard's short stories and some of the collected editions and stuff. So I had like familiarity with the character before I even started reading them in the comics. But yeah.
What about Wolf the Barbarian?
None, other than we were kind of talking a little before the podcast. I have never read the glorious long run of Wolf. It's just I knew I wouldn't be able to fit it into all my boxes, so mm-hmm. I just never started collecting it. Yeah. It's just too massive. So yeah. I vaguely remembered like a series being released sometime in the 2010s or something, but this is my first time reading Wolf. Absolutely
wonderful. I'm so glad you mm-hmm. got a chance to read Wolf, especially Wolf number 3. That is a lot. It's a lot.
There's a lot going on in it.
We've got a lot to talk about. Yeah. So John, which one should we hit first here?
Let's start with Wolf.
Okay.
Just because like he's the feisty challenger, right? Probably the challenger to the throne. So
exactly. He is the scrappy upstart. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who have not been following along or checking this out for the first time, what I have been doing in this series, Battle of the Barbarians, is comparing an issue of Conan to an issue of Wolf when they were on the stands together at the same time back in the 70s. This would be 1975 for these two books. And I'm just kind of comparing them. Which one is a better Barbarian book? So we are starting with Wolf the Barbarian number 3 from 1975. Set you back 25 cents. The cover is by Jim Craig. The story is The Colossus of the Iron Citadel. The script is by Steve Skeets. He is the co-creator of DC's Hawk and Dove. It is plotted, penciled, and inked by Leo Summers, who is a big guy from the black and white magazines, mostly.
Creepy, right?
Mm-hmm. And you can tell in the artwork. Like, it's crazy.
Just kind of kicking off into this, when it kind of opened up, and I don't have a whole lot of experience with the 60s and 70s fantasy comics. Like I've read some, and I've read a little bit in the 80s and 90s, but there was a lot of parts in here that made me feel like I was also in some panels reading like a Euro comic. Like
Exactly.
it had a like big Euro feel for it, so.
And that's the thing I do enjoy about it quite a bit. And it, John Duffy is the letterer to finish up the credits here. Let's talk about this cover here real quick, because it does the thing that most covers are famous for doing around this time, which is lying to us quite a bit.
Well, and also the other big thing, Maiden in Distress, which ties into that lying. But it hooked me immediately, not so much for her. I'm like, whatever, throw her off the cover. But I love Ratman. I love Skaven. I love all those things. So when this came across and I popped this up, I went, yep, I'm into this, super into this.
Yes, for our cover features, Wolf fighting three of the rat men, striking one savagely. And there is a girl chained to, I guess, the logo, and she is throwing her hand. Well, no, she's chained. Her hands are up, and she is scantily attired and panicking as flames rip all around this mound of green spinach that they're fighting on.
It
The thing
looks
that
great.
it's great, but do you think so? Check this out. So look at Wolf. The chainmail looks all trashed and torn off his shoulders, and then it almost looks like he should be naked. Like, it almost looks like it's torn open, and that should be skin color, his six pack and his
Oh, I see what you're
pectorals.
saying. Yeah. No,
But
absolutely. Unless he's wearing two layers of it. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
it's all colored as the chainmail, which is that's my only gripe. And it says here, can even Wolf the Barbarian survive the revenge of the rat creatures?
See, and I love it already off the bat. Like, they just look like a mangy bunch, and just feral as hell. So, yeah, I'm
Yeah,
into
only
it.
one of them's got a weapon.
Yeah, which is very different than again with the line with it. Once you get inside, they are very well armed.
But that's a lie. The Revenge of the Rat Creatures, like,
Nope.
they play just a minor part in this plot. It's really funny to me that they get the cover and not like the Iron Citadel. You know what I mean? Wild. Well, John, I've got a little synopsis here
Read
for
it. Read
the
it, Brother Jared.
story, and then we'll talk our bits and bobs here. Wolf and the Blader, Rimstrydle, assist a caravan that is under attack by Ratman. It's the Groundlings from Thundar the Barbarian, episode number one. The caravan belongs to Minister Clodford of Cardiff and his daughter, Tyretha. They are destined for her wedding. Knowing the Ratman will return in larger number, the group quickly advances toward their destination, the Iron Citadel, and they are chased right to the Iron Gates by the Ratman, who are burned alive by the Citadel's defenses. Inside, they are led through vast ironworks to meet the fiancé and master of the Citadel, Modeo do Tyrac. Turns out he is Mordek Malmoriak's stepson, which pisses Wolf off. It's quickly revealed that Mordek has secretly held control of his stepson's Citadel. Its guards and Iron Colossus are now turned against Wolf and the wedding party. They escape the Citadel via a hot air balloon after hitting the self-destruct button. And this pisses off Mordek. See, both the balloon and explosives are part of Modeo's go bag. Never trust an evil father-in-law, John.
Absolutely not. Never.
Modeo. Modeo also had lots of gold in the aircraft and a secret estate bought and paid for elsewhere. Wolf is dropped off to continue his journey of revenge, and everyone else lives happily ever after.
Was, I mean, that's, you nailed it. You got it there.
Coming off of the two previous issues written by Larry Hama.
I was gonna ask because you guys talk pretty glowingly about those, so.
Coming into this, it's already quite a shift in tone. I mean, I think that it's cool that you're starting to get a little bit of the promise that was given in the first issue where you got to see a lot of the different countries or regions or whatever, and some of the different species of creature and humanoid. So it's cool that that kicks off, but Steve Skeets, his dialogue is, well, it would be no good for Doug Michelle, my previous guest, because he's
Oh,
like,
I've heard of that guy.
there's a lot of the like flowery fantasy talk
Yeah.
that wasn't really present this heavily before.
Okay. I didn't think it was that crazy, but it's definitely there for sure. But I was kind of expecting it to be a little more so. I can't remember if you kind of gave me a heads up on that or someone else mentioned it, but yeah.
It was not me, man.
It was
I don't
not
get
you.
heads ups.
No. So we kind of talked about the art and feeling a little Euro in this, right? What did like overall, what did you think of like the quality of the art throughout the book on this one?
It has moments. Well, throughout the overall quality, it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
Like I don't mind it. There are definitely points that I gushed over them. Like
Absolutely.
I was like, this is great. And again, it's because it felt like it was drawn for a black and white 70s magazine. And I think the coloring, you lose a lot of that.
Okay.
I feel like you lose a lot of the ink work that would really be showcased in a black and white.
Okay, yeah. No, that's fair. And like unfortunately this is one of those things we'll never probably see the originals from or anything. I'm sure all those are lost to time or well, sorry, I was looking up a few things 'cause I was a little unfamiliar with like the Seaboard version of Atlas Comics and stuff. I guess the artists got to keep most of their stuff, which is kind of radical for the time, I would have to assume. So maybe there is some of that stuff. It would be very interesting to see like some of the original pages on this.
For sure,
There's
man.
some fugly faces every once in a while though. Other than that, I
Yeah.
feel pretty good throughout it. But like it started off rough. Like that first page is not good looking with like any of the faces. So I was real worried when I actually sat down to read this for the first time. I was like, oh no. And I know people love them. I'm gonna get so much hate for this. John Romita Jr. has a very particular lip style that he draws in a lot of his characters, and that's what the first page sort of looked like for me. And I was not excited. And then it quickly turned around, page to page, which maybe that says something about quality or whatnot. But yeah, there was a lot of really great panels in this, but then a lot of just get something on the page type thing as we kind of go through it. So.
I think the fourth page is where it gets really strong for me, where they introduce the daughter
Yes.
and her fucking gown is so cool. Like it's so,
Very
that's where I
ornate.
was like, this is totally a 70s magazine. Like it reminded me of like heavy metal or something like that. And then even that bottom middle panel of Wolf calling the shots and saying,
Yes.
we got to roll. And
Yeah.
it's a close up of him. I love like this is good. I like
Well,
this.
and how can you not like minister, was it Claudeford? What her father?
Yep.
Dude has a chindo on top of his head. It's amazing. Absolutely love it. And he just it, like I it in just to like kind of jump ahead a little bit too, like I was also taken back, especially if this is like a third issue of a Barbarian series, how quick, and maybe the other two had this, and I don't know, like how quickly they jumped into like intermixing high technology, or at least, Industrial Revolution age technology into a fantasy comic. Like I was kind of surprised about that. What was that other one we read? I'm totally blanking on it
Thongor.
now.
We did Thongor.
Thongor. Thongor. Yeah. So like this gave me like heavy Thongor vibes when I was reading it.
I can totally see that because this is the issue where that element, which does exist in the Thongor stories too, really kicks in, right? Especially since we've got a floater, just as in Thongor. The ironworks is very steampunky. I don't know if it's steampunky, but like,
Yeah, not it definitely like Victorian era industrial age, Europe. It like giant smokestacks like belching out and tools. I mean like they had I know this was a thing like on docks and whatnot, but like they have the all their hooks set up and their cranes and whatnot like running through there. So it felt very, very Victorian time period for me in there, which I thought was cool. I thought that was fantastic. I thought the place looked great. Yeah, I thought that was a really neat thing. We skipped over the Ratmen though. I know you were excited about the art, but let's talk about them too, because
I'd love
they do
to.
have a small part in this, but I do just love the throngs of them. It like I thought that had like a really even though it's like really short and they don't quite swarm on them and like the hundreds or anything. I felt it like had a really good feel where you could tell that these things do attack like in numbers. They're not as adept as at fighting, and so they have to just like smother, whoever they're gonna fight. And then they had the most badass kangaroo creatures that they run around on too. Like What was the kangaroos that they rode around in Wonder Woman? Were they just actually kangaroos? I can't remember at this
Yeah, they were
point,
just
but
kangaroos.
oh my God. So those were super cool. There's a lot in these comics that Douglas guy is not gonna like as well.
Yeah, they call them hoppers, and
Toppers, yeah.
the rat men that ride the hoppers, and they're almost like knights. They've got like cloaks, and I liked that. And
It
I
looked
also
like those were more the scouts or more the knights, like you said, kind of like the knights of it, where at first they were just fighting the footmen. They probably scavenged a few of their weapons from fallen dead comrades and stuff.
It comes across that these rat men probably just attack anybody and anything.
Yeah.
I also like the costume change Wolf has the daughter do so that she can travel more quickly.
Confused me a little at first.
And
Thought
so
she might be a different character.
And so again, like this, her outfits just give me like that just looks like a character that'd be in a heavy metal
Absolutely.
movie or something.
Or even like an 80, like that looks up straight up like late 80s, early 90s X-Men outfit too.
Okay,
Like
yeah.
has, it kind of has that boob window going on and showing some tummy and stuff, but like also like sleeves,
Yeah,
so
like a
like it,
short jacket. It's got like a short jacket, like Rogue would wear.
Wonder Woman could have wore this when she was her alter ego at some point. So yeah, no, I love the design, a lot of the costuming. I'm gonna say it a couple times in this, but like I was really surprised quite how much I like some aspects of this. So
Oh, I love that panel of the Rat Man getting burned alive too from
isn't
the.
it good? Oh my God, giant alligators that spit fire? Hell yeah, dude.
Iron Citadel, let's talk about it. Yeah, they walk through it. There's like big giant smelters and everything. It's like this is where they got the idea for the Star Wars prequel, where they do that whole scene
Oh.
in the smelter.
It's Star Wars. I don't follow, man. It's like I watched that once and I don't care. I assume you mean where Anakin
You care enough to know. You knew right what I was talking about.
I think, well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, and then it's got this big giant wackadoo colossus and the like poking out of the middle of a walkway that shoots big fucking chunks of flame out of its hands.
I will admit I kind of hated this. It was kind of like Marvel's Destroyer whenever he'd show up. I'm just like I don't care. It just he looks so meh. Maybe if this thing had ran for 20 or 30 years and he made a comeback three or four times, they would have got that look right. But right now he looks like a GoBot that rusted out in the rain, and I don't love it.
The GoBot features on the opening splash page too. I'm surprised, like this is what I would have thought would have been on the cover is the GoBot.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's not.
I agree too, because I do not like the design of it. Please give me the Rat Man all day.
Is there any other bits you want to hit on as we go through? Because we just get a lot of like setup of
No.
like how this is his step Mordek's stepson and
Yep. Yep.
what he's doing here and
You can tell that they were going to go for like a very long form story, and he was going to be the big baddie, probably throughout the series, you know. But unfortunately, you know, four issues and done. There was a couple other things I just want to hit, like on the it was fun that they had a hot air balloon in it. Was like sometimes that makes me eye roll really hard. But I don't know. It felt right with this, with it being, like I said, kind of like a Victorian era technology kind of going on in there. I think my favorite character in the book, just to kind of touch upon it, I think it was Minister Clodford. He was just so like greedy and like a weasel type character, and just looking to like sell off his daughter to the highest bidder. It just I think he would have been a fun character to like revisit throughout the series, and you know, either give him a little bit of growth or just always make him the absolute jerk off of the series, which he could have. But yeah, other than that, I had a good time reading this. The Colossus I didn't care about, but love that they included the map in the back of the world. It's always a bonus.
That was going to be my big closing
Oh,
awesomeness.
well, look
Is
at
that
me. Look at me bury the. It's not the lead. Look at me bury the end.
no, dude? It's fine because we could point out more panels and stuff that we think are great. And like, I think the role the Colossus plays in the very end, like for the buildup that you get of the Colossus, and then it doesn't really pay off in the final fight.
Yeah, I felt that actually kind of about both books that we're going to talk about, where like the monster wasn't that big of a deal, like the main monster in it, you know? And especially in Wolf, kind of fell flat. So like overall with the book, like it had moments where, you know, the Rat Man and everything, where I was kind of like, hell yeah, dude. But overall, like, I'm like, it's an average fantasy comic that I've read. Did I like it? Yeah. Would I ever read this again? No. Since there's only three others, I might go read those, especially since you guys talk so glowingly of the first two. What I did also enjoy, just a super quick aside, is the letters in the back. I love that they were included in this, and it makes me a bit sad because people seem to be pretty excited for it, for this company, and then they were only around for like a year or two and didn't do a whole lot. Remind me a lot of when we're talking with Corey about CrossGen, especially with like their artist pay rates, and you know that they kind of took the tropes and stereotypes of like all these other characters and kind of I won't say direct copied them, but were strongly influenced by them and modeled after.
Exactly. I had the exact same feelings when we did the cross gen as well, because I was like, this is just it's Atlas all over again. It's crazy.
Didn't see, and I didn't know much about Atlas until little spoilers or whatever behind the scenes for everyone else. Jared told me about this months and months and months ago. So the first time I read this was months and months and months ago. I did a little catching up on Atlas and Seaboard years, I guess is what you call it. But it was a fun Wikipedia read, and then reading some interviews and articles from other people. So.
The world map is, as you said, a wonderful addition. This is the first time it's appeared in Wolf Comics.
Okay.
I really want to know who is the mastermind behind it. Like, is this Hama's projected? Like, was this his planned out map of the world, or did they say just somebody make one? I really want to know. It does show some of the regions that were mentioned by Hama in the very first issue.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When I see maps like this in comics, it just makes me want to do some sort of RPG campaign there.
See, which is so weird. Just a little side note on that too. I really like when there are maps included in things such as comics or, you know, a book. And so when you're the reader, you can kind of reference that and get a like frame of point of view. I don't know about you, but like more and more, I'm listening to arguments that kind of sway me away from having a map when you play RPG games. Not like a tactical map where all the minis are, but like an actual map that the player characters can look and see everything, just because of like how rare they'd be, you know, in a world, possibly a fantasy world or an older setting, and how hard they would have been to come across, and like more of it was word of mouth or like what you know, or like a general like vague map, you know, like the Northwoods are up here, you know, in the north and whatnot. But I love seeing them for these type of things. But do you have a feeling on that, or do you not care either way?
I have lots of feelings on it.
Is this a whole nother episode?
It very well could be, because for me, a world map in an RPG, it's a double-edged sword, because number one, it's awesome. It's awesome to see, you know, be like, oh wow, look at all this. Look at all this potential, right? But then you're also somewhat bound by it
Yes.
and enslaved by it.
Yep.
And so I have totally changed the way I run campaigns. I want to say what, last 2 years or whatever, I kind of changed a lot of my old practices. One of them is I don't give a shit about a map. I don't
Okay.
care what realm we're on, what world we're on, what game world we're in. None of that matters to me. What matters to me is the adventure itself and
Absolutely.
the good times that comes from it, playing with friends.
Okay.
So I don't give a shit
Either way,
about a
really?
map, and
Okay.
but I know a lot of players do,
They
and
do.
but then you're going to run into those people that like love the Forgotten Realms. I'm not one of them, but people that love it and then know it backwards and forwards, and they're like, well, this, and I'm like, whoa, 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 I'm not getting that detailed. I don't care.
Or it like, is it Forbidden Lands? Is that the one where like you reveal the map, kind of fill it out as you go, which I
Oh,
think is super interesting.
West Marches?
It's a West Marches style, yeah, and
Okay.
I think it's from Free League,
Okay.
and there's a bunch of others that do it. So RPG fans, don't scream at your car stereo right now or your phone.
They
You're
can
a
scream all they
genius.
want, John. It
They
doesn't
can
matter.
scream all they want. Oh, but yeah, I like the reveal. I like the idea that like, yeah, they kind of have an overlay of the land, but they don't know what landmarks are named until they get up in that region, then they talk to some people. And then you like label things as you kind of go out. And similarly, I think that's a great, not even alternative. I think that's a great way to do it. So yeah, give them a map or give them a lay of the land, but only have a few things on there, and then like more reveals itself as you get more familiar with areas. So
All right,
let's
man.
talk about the heavyweight. Let's do it.
Let's move on to Conan the Barbarian number
I don't even remember
15.
that first guy's name anymore.
That other guy?
I
Yeah.
don't even know his name.
There's just a blonde barbarian and a black-haired barbarian.
Oh, he was blonde. That's right. That's, yeah.
Couldn't be more opposite. The cover here is by John Buscema, and Tom Palmer is inking with some John Romita alterations. I believe it's probably Conan's face, because the girl sure looks like a Buscema girl.
Yep.
The story is The Altar and the Scorpion. Roy Thomas is the writer. Layouts are by John Buscema, and the finishes are by Tom Palmer. Phil Rachelson does the colors, and John Costanza the letters. So during this time of the Conan the Barbarian monthly comic, Buscema is just doing breakdowns. And so Tom Palmer doing the finishes is him really filling out this quick layout art that Buscema's doing. So I didn't realize that until I read a little afterword that Roy Thomas wrote about this comic. And that makes a lot of sense, because all of the issues in this recent run I've been reviewing, the art has all been like just a little off the regular Buscema vibe.
Right, okay.
And it's because he was just doing breakdowns. Everybody else was finishing the work.
Gotcha.
On this cover, it says, alone, sword in hand, Conan must face the god in the crypt. He is amongst, looks like a ruined city or temple or something. There's a young woman who is screaming with her hand thrown back near her mouth. And there are a couple dead guys amongst all this stuff, as two menacing, scaly hands are coming at our barbarian, who is in the middle, ready to fight.
So before we get into that little synopsis that you're going to drop, between those two covers, I think Wolf won covers.
I think Wolf wins the cover too, just because this one is also a lie, and they're all just lie to us, John.
That's what comics do, man.
I think the only thing I really like about it is the lady.
I love the hands. I do love the sinister hands, even though it really has nothing to do with it. The lady is very nice too. She's my style there.
Something about I think the coloring on the Wolf cover grabbed me more too than it does here. All righty, here we go. So this is following the end of the Kothar storyline, Kothar and the Conjurer's Curse. And Conan rode off at the end of that one by himself. And here he now seeks employment in the city of Belverus during a festival upon which a wild bull rampages through its streets. A young acrobat distracts the bull, allowing Conan to wrestle and snap its neck. Enter Murillo, now captain of the Crimson Company. Murillo is from Robert E. Howard's story, Rogues in the House. It was
Okay.
adapted into Conan the Barbarian Comics, issue number 11. But if I may make a suggestion, I
Sure.
would say read the Dark Horse adaptation of Rogues in the House, which appears in issues 41 through 44 of their series, simply titled Conan. It is better.
Okay.
Murillo invites Conan and the revealed to be a girl acrobat named Tara to join his company. While traveling to Ophir, Murillo recites a tale from the time of King Cole, wherein a pair of scorpion god worshippers are attacked by a servant of the Black Shadow. The servant is killed by a scorpion sting despite his magic ring of power. The ring was buried beneath a scorpion shrine in what is now a ruined city. The Crimson Company, hired to investigate the city, find a large crystal scorpion shrine. The scorpion comes to life, is defeated, and a passage underground revealed. The magical ring is found. Conan warns against touching it. Murillo agrees, leaving two guards with orders not to touch it, and the company leaves to report their findings. We get an epilogue. After 3 days, the two guards touch the ring, which releases its dark power. Both men are consumed by a shadow that grows in size as it devours each man.
Let's talk about it.
Wowie, Zowie, John.
Jared, I'm so glad you brought me in on this issue. This
Oh,
is,
shit.
if you didn't specifically pick this out for me, I'd be shocked.
I didn't because you guys all were jumping on, like, when I asked everybody, what do you want to do? Everybody was like, I'll go in, I'll go here, I'll read this, I'll read that. And when I was reading it, okay, before you say anything,
Yes.
I was like, John's gonna love Tara.
You are not wrong.
I was like, John's gonna love Tara. And it's great because also when she's revealed, we get another, the same thing we got in the Thongor we did together. It's a girl.
Yep. I was wondering if that's the whole reason you picked this one, was just that.
No, it worked out awesome. It's so great.
So let me tell you. Like the they hit so many of the Conan comic beats in this one, or not beats, but like the tropes that have to be there. Like Conan messes up an animal. Sorry, Doug. He got his horned helmet, which I'm not a fan of. I don't like the horned helmet. I know a lot of people love it. I think you're in that camp. Could be wrong, but it's iconic, at least for like the comic version of Conan. There's cursed items in here, which I'm always a huge fan of, and like any comic or any story, give me those cursed items. And also Conan just has a raging hard on for battle and killing at all times, and like if you don't entertain him with murder and blood, he's gonna leave. Like, and he makes it very apparent and just keeps repeating it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Here's some interesting background on what Thomas is doing here, real quick.
Okay.
So again, this is all from his personal notes, which is titled "Long Live the Queen." It is found in the back of Volume 8 of the Chronicles of Conan from Dark Horse. The insight he gives here is that, okay, so well, first off, the altar and the scorpion is inspired by a short Robert E. Howard Cole story. It's unfinished. It's just a very short bit. And you know what, John? In the comic itself, when Murillo is telling the story he's telling is the Robert E. Howard story.
I was actually genuinely wondering about that. I was wondering if they recycled a story and like, yeah, there was a, or not recycled story, but like it was a callback to something that had already existed or had already been a Cole comic or short story. Yeah.
And the ring, though, is a bit that Roy inserted in
Good work, Roy.
the actual short story. There is no ring, but that kind of also like plays into the serpent ring that that Thoth Amon was
Okay.
all hard about. So it's kind of like a it's kind of about a kind of a little bit of a retread, Roy. But that's all right. We'll let it
Really?
go. We'll let it go. We'll let it go.
Okay.
Magic rings are plentiful. I can't slide him on that at all.
See, and I just haven't read enough of Conan or familiar enough with it. Like I loved that ring showing up here. And the creature that it unleashed and it we'll talk a little bit more about that. That's definitely something I want to kind of hit on, but
So Roy in the Conan the Barbarian series, he's following a timeline of the various written works of Conan at the time, which not only is the Robert E. Howard stuff, it includes the DeCamp and Sprague stuff. And so he's trying to follow the storyline. He needs Conan to make it to Argos. And so, which is something he started way back in like issue 11 or something like that. With Murillo. That's where he introduced
Okay.
that. So Conan is now starting to get where he was supposed to get to a long time ago. At the time, Roy was reading, he was reading a lot about Renaissance Italy and how in the forming of that there was all these like money for hire generals that ran like mercenary companies and stuff and such. And so he was like, well, I'll have Murillo be like one of those guys. And he's got this Crimson Company and they're just doing gigs. And then Tara, the acrobat, who ends up playing a very interesting role as these comics go on. He says, I invented Tara and made her of that agile profession, which is there's a Minoan sport of bull dancing. He named her after his younger sister, who was just graduating from college at the time.
She's a spitfire. I liked her, and I really, really enjoyed how they wrote her. She has potential to have like a lot of good character moments and like depth in upcoming issues. Because we were talking a little bit before the show. You said she continues throughout this arc. Yeah.
She does, and she becomes part of the reason why Conan has to go to court, where he kills the judge, flees the court, jumps onto the ship, and then meets the Queen of the Black Coast.
Oh, really?
Now, in the story, Queen of the Black Coast, in the beginning, Conan talks about how a friend of his and his lover, I think they get into some trouble or something, and he does his Conan thing and I think killed somebody, and so he goes before court. I probably got that all wrong, and everyone's
That's
gonna be
okay.
like, this
That's
guy doesn't
okay.
know what he's fucking talking about.
People are
Look,
gonna
it's
be
been a while.
screaming. People are gonna be screaming at their tape deck right now. Their four track.
The very issue that leads up to Queen of the Black Coast, the very last one with Tara and her boyfriend, which I believe she picks up or meets next issue, I believe. It's drawn by Mike Ploog.
Oh
It's
yeah.
awesome. It's an awesome issue.
Okay. I kind of buried the lead a little earlier, but I'm for sure going to continue reading the rest of this storyline or this arc or whatever. Like I know it got collected into one volume, and I'm going to see if I can track that down. If not, I'll just find them individually. I really, really liked this issue a lot, and I was not. This is not hyperbole. This might be my favorite thing someone has ever had me read and come on their podcast to talk about.
You're kidding me.
No, I loved this comic, and it's fantastic. I there's like a lot of questions I have, you know, because like I'm not real familiar with Cole, like in fact not familiar with Cole at all. And I like that you know, that his story was thrown into this one as well. But I was like, oh man, like this Thuron guy seems like a badass. So I started going to look him up, and I think he's only in this issue, yes? I think when I looked it up, I think he's only in this issue because he appears
Oh,
and
the black, the
then he
servant.
dies.
Yeah, Thuron is the black servant
Yeah.
of the shadow. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he's a cool character. I was like, and they're all like Thuron. So I'm like, oh, he has to be an established character, you know? But no, I thought that was cool. You were super right about Terra. Like I could also see Corey, who you listeners heard about on the cross-gen as well. I can see Corey being super into her.
Yeah.
She's great. Like she's not much of a fighter, but man, or at least, you know, as far as we can tell, but she can dodge, which came into a big effect in this one.
Yeah, and she's just a teen. She's like 16 or something like that.
Okay.
Just kind of an acrobat's costume. It's kind of almost like a, you know, just sim it's just a simple top, simple pants. She's got kind of a, like a wide wrap sash around her, tightly wrapped around her waist and like dangling fringe neck thing she wears, and it's also, you know, repeated on her boots.
It makes her stand out quite a lot from the rest of the characters, which I think is which is great. I like when, you know, these old fantasy tales, and I think maybe you and Doug were kind of talking about where like they bring in a lot of other cultures and whatnot and kind of incorporate them all in, you know. There's like a lot of diversity in these books. And also like with character design, I think that's like one of the really strong things about fantasy is that you can just have like all these characters that look so unique. It's like they're all G.I. Joes. And I don't know what I'm trying to say exactly, but like I love that like she just looks so much different than everyone else in the book. And that a lot of the other people look so much different than the rest of the people in the book. So I think that's cool.
With the costuming, I think what it really pushes for me is that it pushes characters with a profession, you
Yeah, there
know,
you go. Yeah.
right? Like, so you can tell she's an entertainer. You can tell Murillo is a sellsword. They arm Conan with chainmail shirt and the horned helmet to kind of and a cloak to be like, see, you got the job. Here's your uniform.
I don't know what else you had to talk about in this issue. I really only have two other things that I want to bring up because
Let's get to it because I've got a couple points I'd like to bring up, and then
cool.
otherwise I think we're good.
Cool. So what I really like, and they kind of tie in together, is I love when they show Conan like learning from others. And that like he's adaptable and that he's like willing to take a lesson. Like I think that's like a really great character trait of his that they like play up really well in this one. He's learning from Murillo. Like Murillo is like showing him like you know, you'd be dead if you fought the way you did against any of my men, you know, type thing. Like they're just gonna come in and stab you. Conan is such a great character in like that Bruce Lee kind of way where he's like, whatever works. You know, incorporate it. Whatever doesn't, just throw it out. You know, like yeah, I don't need the barbarian fighting style for everything. And I think it's like why he had such success, like being a thief and you know, being a fighter and being a you know the barbarian wild man that rages at times too. Like he just he uses what works, right? And so later on when he's fighting that scorpion, I think it's dope because like. The slashing that he would normally do doesn't work, so he employs it. So Conan switches from slashing damage to piercing damage with the same weapon, so he can damage the scorpion more effectively. It, you know, it wasn't reducing it. I love that part of that was like one of my favorite parts of this book was seeing that play out.
He's learning how to also lead men, like to lead like a company of free men. And that's cool to see too, you know, like he's picking up. He served in armies before, but this is like the first time where he's kind of given a little bit more of a position of importance.
And he's also probably like learning a little bit of patience and a little bit of like you said, the commanding the men, but also like when not to just go spring into action, or it's I think it's fascinating when like these writers do nail these parts of like a character learning, because sometimes it can be so ham-fisted in these older comics, and it is a little bit, but also like I think they do it with like just enough finesse that it like works so wonderfully.
I also love like how independently strong and confident Tara is, to go back to her again.
Absolutely. Yep.
Like she does not hesitate or shy away from any of the challenges or any of the duties they're doing here. It's awesome.
I
One
agree.
thing I wanted to point out that I thought was really cool, there is a panel when they first discover the scorpion altar, which could look better than it does.
And as we kind of talked about, not the best boss monster to end an issue with, but sure.
So that would be page 22 of the comic. The bottom left panel shows Murillo pointing and barking some orders. The way he is drawn there looks such like it's an homage to Barry Windsor Smith's version of this character.
Really? Okay.
I think with the hair and the face, the way the face is drawn, I can't not see that. Like you could almost have glued a Barry Windsor Smith panel right there, and it would have looked almost exactly the same to
That's
me.
fun.
And I really enjoy that.
Do you think it's an homage, or do you think it's more of like a reference type thing?
Maybe, right? Maybe a little both.
Okay.
Now let's talk about the Ring of the Black Shadow. You
Oh, it's
love
so
a
cool.
cursed item.
I love a cursed item, baby.
What do you think of the design of this ring here?
It's fun. Like, obviously, who the hell's gonna put that on? Who's gonna put that on that isn't a dumb moron? And yeah, of course some dumb moron puts it on. And which is great. I love when characters well, I mean most people do, when they're like their hubris and just like the stupidity of them is like their downfall. And first dumb man puts the ring on, gets eaten up, and the second guy's like, psh, we faced down a scorpion, and you know, this is nothing. We killed a god. I can take out like a shadow, and then the shadow just swallows him whole. And I dig that so much. I love having just like a terrifying monster that, you know, easily dispatches with a few people. You know, it's just setting up for Conan to have to deal with this thing at some point, I'm sure. So
Oh yeah.
yeah.
'Cause the next issue is the Day of the Devourer. Issue 53 ends the whole run of Battle of the Barbarians. I will be doing issue 53 alongside Wolf number 4 and
Who's
Matt
guessing on that
Baum.
one?
Matt
Matt
Baum
Baum. Hey.
from the Two-Headed Nerd returns to talk about that, because much how this Conan ended up being perfect for you, unbeknownst to both of us, when I read the next issue of Conan, I was like, well, this is Matt Baum has to talk about this issue. Like
Nice.
I knew right away. If you're reading along, you can find issue 1 through 4 at the archive.org. You can read the scans there. I suggest everyone at least look at them, check them out.
That's for Wolf, by the way.
That is for Wolf.
Wolf 1 through 4.
But for Conan, you're on your own. Good luck.
There, it's reprinted at least in a couple things, but yeah.
Oh yeah. It's been reprinted multiple times now. John, my friend,
Jared,
thank
my
you
pal.
again so much for jumping on board here. And, you know, do you want people to find you online, or you just whatever?
I'm not really online anymore. Like, I have a blue sky, but I only lurk and check out news. So, I have an Instagram, monosyllabic monk. that you can find me at, but I also don't post a whole lot there unless it's October.
Speaking of which, to talk over you again,
Yeah, please
how
do.
about what I meant to just ask you with the ring is, and how like it's forbidden, don't touch it. Everybody don't
Yeah.
touch the shiny red button. You're big into horror,
I love
horror
horror.
movies
Yeah.
and things like that.
Yes.
And that was a great little bit too, where I was like, oh, this is like a horror movie for
Yeah,
John,
dude.
where it's like, don't touch the thing, but then
And
somebody
they're always
does.
so stupid. They're so stupid. It looks awful. Why would you touch that thing? Why would you put, I mean, they're big, tough guys. So, I mean, this is equivalent of a biker gang, and they want to put their Iron Cross on the back of their leather jacket and stuff. And then he wants to wear his cool skull ring.
Stupid.
Stupid, stupid people get what come to them when they put on cursed items.
Also, I've mentioned it before in the past, but John and I, we were on a little play Pathfinder podcast. You can find it also at goodpencil.com. Pathgrinders, check it out.
Which you should definitely check it out. Listen to that. Listen to some of the other things on there. Whenever John Bunger starts selling those sweet stickers that he's working on for his Reverse Normals logo, you all should buy oodles of those too.
He got some. He had some printed up. He's got stickers. That boy's got stickers. He's got.
Listen, I'm not one of John Bunger's real friends where he like hands things out to or like contacts me or talks to me except at like times where he's forced to. So, I don't get to find those things out. I'm just his cheerleader and then he just casts me to the side.
Isn't that just the way?
Yeah, that's Bunger in a nutshell for you. Anyways, we should get out of here so you can go do some nice things on Sunday. But hey, this is just shout out. This is me just saying how sweet Jared is. Jared works around everyone's schedules and he has a very busy schedule. So just know that like when there's one of these episodes, he has put a lot of work into getting us all together to do these things. So big shout out, Jared.
Thanks, buddy. I love doing it with you guys, and it's an honor to me that you guys would take the time to do it, because
Almost literally any time.
it's just a passion project that I'd like to do.
Sign me up.
So I got to do all the things that I do. I haven't said in a long time, hey man, follow me on Instagram and subscribe and all that stuff and send me an email. You can do that if you'd like. I do talk back to people when they do. Just know that. And also support your local comic book shop and support your local public library. Oh my gosh, I just rented Attack the Block and John Carpenter's Thing, and my kid wanted to watch The Breadwinner.
Oh,
The
libraries are
public
great.
library's got that stuff. You can't watch any of that on streaming, all that streaming bullshit that's out there.
Libraries are great. A lot of times you can request things. They're great places for people to go, meet people, do activities. We play D&D there sometimes. I've gone down there and used their 3D printing capabilities a few times here and there. So like libraries have a lot to offer besides books. So go down and check out your library if you haven't been there in a while.
Exactly.
Hey, this is John popping back in here. Jared let me know that we forgot to talk about what I picked to spend my three nickels and a dime on and what issue to pick up at this time. And between Wolf the Barbarian 3 and Conan the Barbarian 52, both of them I enjoyed. One clearly won for me, even though they both kind of had a little bit underwhelming final bosses or mega creatures in the issue. They both had a lot going for them. But Conan the Barbarian 52 just hooked me and hooked me hard. I will be continuing on with that series and really glad that I got a chance to read this. I would not have read this if it had not been for this show.
And until next time, when you get kitted out with your work uniform as a free company mercenary, maybe look at the other helmet options instead of the one with big, gigantic, 4-inch thick bull horns.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Jared. Bye.
We are starting with Wolf the Barbarian number 2. The
three.
Cover is by
Number
Jim.
three.
Oh, shit.